Great. So welcome, everybody. And a very warm welcome to John Stirk, who's talking to us from East Sussex. So this is the first time we've had John on Embodied Health Learning. And he's going to be talking about his book, Deeper Still, which I came across quite recently. A client of mine introduced me to it. And he's also the author of another book, which he'll mention as well. So John is a yoga teacher and has been for many, many years, and also trained as an osteopath. But no, these days he tends to concentrate on his yoga work. And he's been influenced by lots of people over the years, including we were just talking about Jay Krishnamurti and his work with R.D. Lang. So I'm really intrigued about his work. This is a very experiential webinar, so he's going to get us to do some exercises as well. So I would suggest you get nice and comfortable. So welcome, John. Thank you for being here. And also just to say that we have a discount code, which we'll put in the chat a bit later, for his book, or both of his books, this one and the other one he's going to mention as well, from Handspring Publishing. Welcome, John. Thank you for being here.
John, thanks very much. Good evening, everybody, and thank you for coming. Just to get this out the way, the original book was called The Original Body. That was written 5 years ago, and that led to this book of mine, Deeper Still, which John's just mentioned. And there's two meanings to deeper still. Obviously, one is that the stillness is deeper that we come across, and the other is that something or one's experience is even deeper. And I think both of those descriptions apply to where I happen to be these days. Nothing new as far as yoga is concerned. What I'd love to do is to I'll just talk for a couple of minutes. And then I'd like you to, well, you can do that now, actually. I'd like you to lay down, please. You can hear my voice. I wouldn't necessarily call this an exercise that we're about to do, but it's physiologically experiential. And if you have a bolster, if yoga teacher, if you have a bolster or some cushions, please put your legs over the bolster. Back of the knees underneath, back of the knees over the bolster or the cushions. And make sure your head is comfortable. So you may want to rest your head on a folded blanket or something. And it's not very warm today, so it also may be a good idea. We're going to do this for about 20 minutes. And then we're going to discuss yoga, really, and where we are with it today. So be warm enough, be comfortable, as if you're beginning a session. And because of our time frame, we're booked for an hour, we'll probably run over. It's for me, it's even though we're having an ongoing experience as teachers, I find it more conducive to talk about what I would like to talk about while we're in something or just come out of something, so that the mind it can be a little bit quieter. Okay, so if you just settle and let your pelvis settle and let your thoracic spine settle. How many times have we done this? But I'd like to recap something we're all aware of, I think, that in essence, yoga was devised to do two things many, many centuries ago. Firstly, to place one's experience into perspective, because we tend to be very attached to our experience. Obviously. And secondly, to some extent, transcend the experience. So we have experiences, isolated experiences, which are, if you like, condensations of energy. and experience. It can be anything, meeting somebody in the street, whatever. And also you have experiencing across the board. And everything kind of fits into that. The fact of experiencing gels very well with the thing of being and being present and so on. In the process of looking at the fact of experience, our experience, yoga tends to awaken our conditioning, because in general terms, all experience, all of our experience is conditioned by past experience and expectation based on past experience. So, because yoga is extremely creative, and that creative is found in its approach to our conditioning, and it's an invitation to dissolve our conditioning and awaken to something else. So, and as we know, an unconditioned state harbors lucidity, ease, and the relaxation of non-essential and repetitive thought. It's really a big ask. So, in this position that you're in is ideal, because we're not trying to perfect a posture. We're not, we can let go to gravity and so on. And if you just begin to very gently and quietly pay attention to your pelvis, the fact of your pelvis, it's a structure. And we know what the pelvis consists of, but it's a structure that also provides us with the sensation of that structure. But we know the pelvis is there because we feel it, obviously. And probably the most obvious sensation coming from the pelvis is where the sacrum touches the floor. Floor touches the sacrum. So that's the feeling of structure. And coming back to our conditioning, conditioning is structured. It's in our tissues, it's in our nervous system, it's in our fascia, it's in our biochemistry, it's in our behavior. And to address the conditioning, as the yogis discovered a long time ago, we start with the body. So the whole idea is to dissolve structure as far as yoga is concerned. And pelvis is a very good place to start. So we can begin by separating for the moment the structure of the pelvis from its actual sensation. How do you do that? So everything you know about your pelvis, take a few breaths if and when necessary. We haven't got very long, but just take a few breaths if and when necessary, so that you sink a little bit more. But we know so much about the pelvis. We can be full of it. But it's not helpful right now. We need to pass through that knowledge so that we get pure sensation. The structure is always going to be there in the background. There's nothing we can do about that, but in the background. And if you look at the predominant sensation coming from the pelvis, coming into consciousness, you'll notice that the contact with the floor, that sensation, has the most density. It's the most structured, obvious, feelable. Just above that, within the pelvis, without referring to the anatomy, seeing the inner pelvis, if you like, as a space, you have the feeling of space comparatively. A condensity between the back of the sacrum, the sacral bone, and the floor. And just above that, just inside the pelvis, comparative sensation of space. And in terms of levels of density, that's happening all the time in the body. It's also happening in our behavior, physiologically, physically. Emotionally, mentally, and possibly spiritually, we're moving between some kind of condensation and something that's more spatial, something that's more fluid, something that spreads out more. Anger, for example, has more condensation, has more density than appreciation. Appreciation is very light in relation to anger or anxiety or undue excitement and so on. So the first job, in terms of approaching our tissues, is to be appreciative of them, and they respond to them. So there's a lightness and a softness and a gentleness about the way we receive the sensations coming from the pelvis. This is just the pelvis. I mean, the yogis sat on it for centuries before the advent of more adventurous positions. And the area of density that you feel with its neighboring, if you like, spatiality, those two variable and varying sensations, they feed each other. So the density anywhere in the body, the density where the thorax at the back of the body touches the floor, can absorb the space, the neighboring space. So you have space inside the thorax comparatively. Of course, there's no empty space, but it's levels of density. And presently the density is between the back of the pelvis and the floor and the back of the thorax and the floor. Pretty obvious, the sense of weight. And then just inside that, just above that, within the pelvic and the thoracic cavities, you have relatively much more spatial sensations. Now, whether that's due to a scarcity or a proliferation of sensory nerve endings, it doesn't actually matter. It's something that consciousness engages with. That's where we'd be going next. So, sense of self, total sense of self, as we find ourselves, as we sense ourselves, is continually moving between condensation and decondensation, between density and space. You become very clear on this when you're practicing something like craniosacral therapy or cranial osteopathy, or some kind of hands-on work, but also very clear in yoga practice. We are also practitioners. We are our own practitioners and invite others to discover that for themselves. So we have these structures. We have a pelvic structure, we have a thoracic structure. We may have the structure of the back of the arms or the shoulder blades touching the floor. And it's possible to lighten that structure, to enlighten those structures, those sensations of those structures, not only through neighboring space — space is extremely creative — not only through neighboring space just above, wherever, but also by going into the sensation. You can choose, your mind can go into the pelvis, your pelvis. Your mind can go into the density of the thorax, touching the floor. And because the whole practical side of yoga was to penetrate and to pass through and to transcend conditioning and habit, which were condensations of untoward behavior, if you like, they use their minds to — we do this, we all know this as teachers — we use our minds to penetrate, just to go into softly, gently. And we begin to discover that not only is there condensity with neighboring space, these two areas feeding each other, but there's also a decondensation, a spatial element within the tissues, within the cells. I mean, we know it. We've done the work, we've done the anatomy and the physiology, but to feel, experience a decondensation without doing anything within these areas of density. Space comes towards consciousness in a variety of ways. Space presents itself to consciousness through the relationship between density and space. We've only got so much time and go through it, through density and space, through the space within the tissues themselves as they open up, as you go into them, consciousness. Before we get to consciousness itself, consciousness actually goes into the sensations and changes them. They become more spatial. There's also a sense of space beneath the floor as the weight of the body sinks. You know, we're continually gravitating. The opposing movement is the feeling of space energy coming up from beneath the floor through the back of the body, the entire body, passing through us and moving on into the space above us, right? All physics, getting closer and closer to quantum physics, I suppose. So we have this extraordinary relationship with space. We are condensations of space, organic, thinking, feeling, emotional, condensations of space. And we can begin to experience this more and more. You just let your arms float up towards the ceiling, leaving the shoulder blades on the floor. Just let your arms float up towards the ceiling. That's not the yoga. It's just the mechanical movement of allowing the arms to float up with soft elbows and soft hands, and leave the shoulder blades behind. So you can get quite an exaggerated sense of the shoulder blades really being sucked into the ground or the floor. And that's a quite pronounced densification of sensation. Sensation itself is also a structure. So the structure of that sensation we can go into with consciousness. Consciousness being the essential feature of the history of yoga, if you like. So the densification of the shoulders and the back of the body being drawn by gravity, space passing through the shoulders from below, the sensations of condensation where the sensation is stronger, and the neighboring areas of space. As you go into the condensation with your mind, with consciousness, the mind is within consciousness. So let's say go into the sensations with your mind. It's an energy. So the mental energy penetrates the condensation of energy, which is physiological, the shoulders. And the sensation begins to spread. And it spreads throughout the body, and it spreads down towards the pelvis, up through the cranial base, up through the limbic system, up into the sensory cortex. The neocortex perhaps picks it up and wants to think about it, which is helpful to begin with, and then becomes an impediment. And what consciousness loves in the time that we have, what consciousness loves is pure sensation. Talking about the consciousness that the yogis promoted, a quality of consciousness, an uncluttered, lucid, deep, calm quality of consciousness that we're all familiar with. Consciousness loves pure sensation, ideally free from thought, as hard as that is. According to people that know this kind of thing, sensation was the precursor to consciousness in terms of our evolution. So by penetrating the sensation of tissues, that's from the mind, if you like, towards the tissues, and then receiving the space from the tissues into the mind, which is more passive in one way. Consciousness remembers where it came from before the conditioning. We're all conditioned. We can be amazingly, wonderfully amazing, helping lots of people, but you cannot get away from conditioning and habit. That's also a condensation. I'm not saying it's terrible. we're doing something about it, but it pops up when we least expect it. So to penetrate or to pass through, to transcend the bits of conditioning, it's heavier in some people depending on the personal history and the habitual behavior that we have. We, or the yogis, discovered that they could pass through their sense of self, which was initially conditioned. The conditioned sense of self being external to the recommended sense of self, as far as they were concerned. So as pure sensation, to the extent it's possible, flows up, just very gently let the arms open and just rest the back of the elbows on the floor, each side of you. So you've opened the heart space. Another time we could talk more about the heart, the relationship between the heart and our conditioning. But now you have another sensation. Open chest. No effort, no posture to perfect, no arms to organize, no legs to organize, no gathering back to think about. It's almost as if the organism is monitoring itself. And you have space. The skin is you know, the cellular construction of the skin is very interesting because it, lots of space within the cells, between the cells, there's four layers and so on, superficial fascia, all that stuff. But it's there to be passed through in this position. And you can pass through the surface of the body from the inside, because we're in there. You can pass through the surface of the body. If you have no heart, if there's just space where the heart was or lives, if there's no difference between the space, the heart space, and the space beneath the floor and the space above the chest, if the potential density of the heart has dissolved, if we are basically comprised of inner space being touched by outer space, then the skin can be seen as a membrane, very, very fine membrane, as the cells separate. So you have this two-way relationship between the inner space and the space around us. This is before we sit up and look at the breath or look at any meditation or stand up and do anything. This is before. Is it enough? You know, the organism is self-transformative, as you know, it's true to say, it really is, that the less we do, it may take a while to get there. The more we stand back, the more understated we are, the more the organism gets it. Oh, yes, I'm in a space and I'm out of space, but my sense of self is kind of evaporating, kind of dissolving. I'm kind of here and also there at the same time. Sure. These sensations, these possibilities, these relationships between the various elements of space creatively are flowing into consciousness. as we said, through the cranial base, from the heart, from the pelvis, from the solar plexus, from wherever, from the skin, through the cranial base, through the limbic system, into consciousness. Whole brain is consciousness, the whole body is consciousness. So the next densification is consciousness itself. As the walls of the mind come down, as the walls of the mind dissolve, another densification that becomes more spatial, then the information, the sensory information, goes directly to consciousness itself, to the phenomena of consciousness. Consciousness remembers pure sensation as the ego loosens its grip. And at some point, as consciousness itself, from its place of emptiness, relatively, consciousness can begin to look at itself more clearly. The sensations have opened up. The structure of sensation has dissolved. Sensation becomes more spatial. Sensations of space pass through the mind. Into a consciousness that can perceive its mind from somewhere else. And then consciousness can pass through itself. That's the feeling. It's actually a sensation. It's an experience. And the next in line would be, they would say, these guys from many centuries ago, to transcend that experience. And so on. So, as with very, 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 very fine connective tissue, as with very, very, very fine sensations, going from one condensation of sensation into a lighter condensation of sensation, will always be a condensation. It's the same with consciousness. Consciousness can be heavy, it can be dark, but as it begins to awaken through sensation, we can pass through ever lightening sensations of consciousness, ever lightening experiences. So the structure of conditioning, the structure of our conditioning and habit, leave it behind. It'll come back. It'll come back a little bit when we start talking in a moment. And so it should, because we need it. But over time, incrementally, as you know, the exercise aspect is a very, very, very good beginning. The meditations are a very, very, very good beginning. And also to continue throughout life as teachers, wonderful. The breathing is wonderful. When you get down to it, when you boil it right down, there's also just waiting, perhaps on a deeper level, not the idea of it, but the experiential fact of it, consciousness, dynamic consciousness, because it's quite dynamic, entering into itself, penetrating gently, 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 penetrating itself as an unfolding. Consciousness going into consciousness. Having started with the pelvis touching the floor. Consciousness going into consciousness. The dynamic, penetrative aspect of consciousness goes into itself, and then consciousness becomes an expansion and unfolds and then repenetrates and so on. And for some people, that's creation. Okay, because of time, and I'd love to go on for another hour, and very easily could, with this practical side of things. Take your time. Take a few breaths. The breath is just an experience. So let the breath take place within that framework of a broader perspective. Don't get distracted by the respiratory sensations, because they are also condensations, very beautiful ones. And when you've sat up, when you're comfortable, when you're ready, I'm ready, whenever you are, when John's ready, we can, if you'd like to open something up, be a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, John. That was beautiful. So if there are any questions, please do either put them in the chat box or put them in the chat box or the Q&A. Trying to engage my mind a little bit after the exercise.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, the thing is, people come out of that. That was a short time, but people can come out of that. It can happen quickly, John. And it's like dragging up the ego to get it into action mode.
Yeah.
So we've just come out of the intellect. And very often, and I'm doing it now, giving people a time to reorganize themselves, very often what happens is that people are very, just don't want to say anything. They want to be in that space.
Yeah.
You can blame them. So then I continue talking until people have kind of recovered from that, if you like.
Yeah.
So I've got plenty to say, but I'm also very happy to respond to an observation or a query or anything, share something. But don't feel obliged. Don't drag yourself up into your neocortex and say, I have to say something, because it won't feel right to you if you don't feel like it. It has to come spontaneously.
I've got a couple of perhaps comments, John, or questions maybe. The way you describe this, very beautiful. I'm just often the way a lot of people might think about this, or perhaps the way it's described in some literature, is when you look at consciousness, say, coming into form, and as that happens into form, into our bodies, into material objects, then there's a kind of condensation of consciousness that happens in that process. But that, what you were describing was a little bit different to that, right?
Well, I was coming from the other direction. I was coming from sensation. I was starting with the body.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about? The yogis saw it, obviously, as you know, as we were all very aware of it, they saw this grand consciousness. Our whole purpose for being here was to, very beautiful what they said, was to be able to acknowledge this grand consciousness. You know, and we are condensations of that. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. So consciousness becomes form. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
As a yoga teacher, I think it can be difficult to start there. And these days, I think so many people begin yoga because they want to do something about their backache, or the doctor or their osteopaths start doing some yoga, or their asthma. And because it's so amazing on so many different levels, particularly when it comes to health, that it's a very good place to start. So let's get the clear the system. So what we've just been doing is also influencing the cells.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can feel, I mean, I feel it, but the cells start to vibrate on a different frequency because the conditioning is lifting, you know. So yes, absolutely, of course.
And also you were talking about how, you know, when you pay attention like this, your consciousness maybe is entering, say, your pelvis or whatever. Just to look at it from a slightly different perspective as well as manual therapists. Certainly I feel this happening a lot. So with another body, so one's consciousness as a practitioner might do that with a body that one is holding, or a part of the body that one is holding, right?
I think it's the same.
Yeah.
I think if you've got your finger on the particularly you've got your finger over the solar plexus of a baby, or if you're actually holding somebody's very gently holding their head anywhere on the body at all, I think the transmission between practitioner and patient, patient and practitioner, is exactly the same as the transmission between oneself and oneself.
Yeah.
Or between one consciousness and one's own tissues, and also the other way. It's exactly the same relationship. And they're both, in both cases, they are totally enhanced by an appreciation of space, you know, because space is energy.
Yeah.
As you know, space is full of energy. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes, because often in cranial osteopathy and cranial sacral work, we can bring in an intention of space into tissues which we perhaps feel are, say, congested or dense. And I'm also interested in how, I think you touched on this, like how when we bring our consciousness to an area, there are changes that happen as a result of that. That's always something that I find very difficult to explain to other people. I can feel it happening.
By paying attention,
and it can happen in a very physical way that you feel the tissue is beginning to change in all kinds of different ways, and but how that process happens is a very difficult thing to explain. It does happen all the time, but it's a very, very difficult thing to explain why. And I'm just wondering if you have any.
When you've got hands on, you've got hands on.
Yeah.
So it's more immediate. When you're using your mind as your hands, as we do as yoga teachers, it's slightly different. So you've got the advantage in a sense that you've got the contact, which should explain that in a way. But the actual nobody knows.
Right.
Nobody knows what consciousness is. Nobody knows how consciousness came to be. Nobody really knows what mind is. Nobody really knows what happens. Well, you could trace energy if somebody had a device where you'd say, okay, I'm going to focus on my pelvis as a yoga teacher, and I'm going to invite other people to do it. So there I am, I'm laying there or sitting there or in some kind of position, and I switch on my consciousness. I've been working for a certain way, go into something, and it changes. Yes, one does know to a point. It's to do with the quality of one's attention, and tissue responds much more readily to a quality of attention that contains gentleness. It feels it. Quietness. Unsentimental love. Patience. Silence, stillness, all those qualities within an undisturbed flow when there's an absence of expectation. You know this is a cranial sacral. It's the same in the yoga. Absence of expectation, absence of anticipation, all those things. So when the attention is totally free from impediments itself, then the effect on the tissues, the stream of energy, if you like, that goes into those tissues, the tissues just open up. Now, what actually happens between the flow of attention, you take the most wonderful, fabulous quality of attention in the universe, and you apply it to some tissue, some human tissue, and that tissue is going to release, going to go, ah, that's amazing. Well, we've set it up because we have the qualities that are necessary. And I think those qualities are essential in yoga practice. And sometimes it takes a while to get there because it means doing less and less and less and less and less, and then doing a little bit less. But there's so much there, it's so active. But what actually happens in the jump locally between this fabulous quality of attention and the response to the tissues, nobody knows that. Mm. Science doesn't understand that. Mm. It doesn't know what the final jump is, as far as I know. Mm. So I don't know if that makes any sense to you. But
yeah, absolutely. No, yeah. It makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
And there's a big mystery in it, which is lovely.
Well, exactly. And you just mentioned the word mystery. The yogis were also seen as mystics.
Mm.
And if I can just take that a little bit further, in that, mystics mean there's a mystery somewhere. So they were, the mystics were very comfortable, and the yogis were very comfortable with the unknown. And some of it was unknowable, and they didn't have a problem with that. And they felt that within that, they felt that, if you like, the unknown and the space within us, the space within the tissue, you're moving in the body, you're moving into something that's unknown because it's beyond anatomy. It goes into the space within the anatomy. We're 99% space, apparently. And in terms of the bigger picture, spiritually, if you like, it seems to me that the mystics were very comfortable with what couldn't be known, because that unknown was this vast crucible. It was this fertile space where transformation could mm-hmm. take place, because they couldn't take themselves with them into that space. Anywhere that you can take yourself with you, it's an impediment. Mm-hmm. So they found that very, very productive, and that's where the transformation came mm-hmm. and the enlightenments came from that. It's the same with quantum physics. As soon as they, was very interested in mysticism. As soon as the quantum physicists, because most of the time they work with possibilities, it's a possibility that space is full of energy and information and so on. Once that possibility, and then that possibility becomes a probability, but it's not entirely proven. Once something becomes proven, they lose interest. They move on. So it's these two things, Eastern mysticism and quantum physics, that just running in tandem with each other. The mysticism very comfortable with not knowing, and the quantum physics not knowing and wanting to find out. And then if they do find something out, they move on and so on. So very similar.
So Hilary's asking a question. Obviously, since this time last year, a lot of manual therapists have taken to working with people remotely, either on the phone or through Zoom or various ways. And she was just asking how you might use your mind in that kind of situation where you're working with someone, say, over the phone.
Well, I haven't, I must be honest, I haven't done that. I ceased osteopathy. I practiced osteopathy for about 35 years and I stopped about 20 years ago when I moved down to Sussex. And so what I do online is I speak to people's tools. The tools of people in a yoga class online, their fundamental tool, obviously I use my voice. But it's their mind. So I'm speaking to their mind and their consciousness, and then their mind and their consciousness is referring to their tissues, and their tissues are coming back to them. Mm. And how I do that is by being very selective with language, being very repetitive with language, keeping people's attention. And then when I sense or intuit they may be losing their attention, then I may move it somewhere else. But I'm not working with a specific problem. I'm working with the person as a whole. I'm sure hands-on people are as well. If suddenly I decided in this remote climate that we're in, I wanted to do some one-to-one hands-on work. Is this what you're referring to, John? One-to-one hands-on work.
Yeah.
How would I approach that now, having done all these classes online? I would approach it in the same way. And there's two ways of doing it. One, you've got the hands of the client, if it's a place where they can put their hands on their body, their fingers, teach them how to put their fingers very lightly on their body and work with the energy that way. But everything has to be completely relaxed. There must be no stress in the shoulders. They must be 100% totally comfortable so they can get into it. Or, which is as powerful, even more powerful, is just use their minds in the same way as if they were in a yoga class. So if I had somebody with a sacroiliac problem, if their legs were over the bolster, if I had somebody with a problem with the rib cage on one side, or a shoulder, that first of all, make the shoulder or the leg or the hip or the SI joint, wherever it happened to be. If it was a respiratory problem, we might function focus on the diaphragm and so on. And then treat from a distance, because the thing I would say was to Hillary is that we've been talking and talking about space. And I would tell my client this, that space doesn't only separate, it connects. And when you work through the body with space, you find out that space is the ultimate connective tissue, and it's the ultimate connective tissue spiritually, absolutely. So if I've got somebody at home, they can be 300 miles away or wherever, and I'm tuning into them and they're tuning into my voice, and let's say they have a pelvic problem. It could be an organ, it could be on the right pelvis. It could be organic, it could be whatever, visceral, it could be functional, structural, whatever. To calm them down exactly as we've been doing, to explain to them that, and so I'm sure some of you are doing this. I mean, you're doing this already. This, I've just thought about it. I've just been asked the question that their mind is extremely powerful as a tool. It was the ultimate tool, the mind and then consciousness of all the yoga practices. And also when you're hands-on, you're using your mind, you're using your sensory mind full on to enter into to go to a neighboring area, perhaps the other side, where there's not so much emotional conflict. Go to the left side of the pelvis, make friends with the left side of the pelvis, go into it, feel its texture. How does it feel to you? How does it touch the floor? Is it hard? Is it soft? It can be anywhere in the body. Is it dead? There's no pain there. Let your experience of the left side just gently shift over to the right side. See how it feels. Talk about density and space. There's going to be more density on a problem area, and so on, more condensation. So, and feeling my way through. So with the feedback from the client, I can't have a plan. I've got a basic structure of how I can approach that person, given the distance that we're at, but to make that person feel totally safe, which they are at home, and totally cared for by me, and to understand that the space between us is connecting us, and that the space of my understanding as a practitioner, as a healer, the space within that's transmitted through space to him or her. And that's then converted into their space, basically what it is, it's voice to mind, my voice to their mind, and so on. So that's how, and it, for me right now, at this time, it would probably be quite a one, you've made me feel like I want to do it. Be quite a wonderful experience for that person and also for me. So I don't know if that, Hillary, if that helps in any way. This is just thinking about it now.
Wonderful, thank you. Yeah, I think one of the things that has happened over the last year is that people, therapists, have realized how much they can feel in this field, you know, within the space, as it were. Yeah.
Okay. So you know it. I mean, that's you're obviously doing. You're probably taking it a lot further than I've just taken it, because you're doing it on a daily basis, sure. And probably being very surprised by the responses you're getting.
Yes, very.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. Very interesting. Thank you. Do you want to talk a bit about your books, John?
Yeah, thank you. Sure. The first book I wrote after many, many, many years was in The Original Body. That was written in 2015 and published in 2015. And it's called, the subtitle, some of you may have it, it's The Primal Movement for Yoga Teachers. And it's very much about unfolding. There's a lot of information in this. It's quite dense, people have told me. And some people have said it's not an easy read. Other people have said it's easy to read. So I suppose it depends who's reading it. It goes through structure. It goes through the spine. It goes through various sensory experiences. It goes through the fluid experience, which we haven't spoken about tonight. As yoga, I'm talking to yoga teachers, it goes through the musculoskeletal experience. It goes through the fascial experience. And in this, the experiential section, it just begins to touch on space. It just begins to touch on space, but there's quite a lot of other things in here. And this next book, which was published, it came out in January, again through Handspring, is kind of a what came afterwards. And this is more, again for teachers, this is more about the unknown. It's more about what we've been doing this evening. I think it's a simpler read in some respects. And I talk a lot about space in that. And I'll just whet your appetite with a few of the chapter headings, which might be a good idea. The first chapter is about the reality of yoga, and we've kind of touched on that this evening. The second chapter is called Process, and what happens in my workshops and some of my courses, I'm sure it happens to other people, but there are extraordinary things happen in group work that very often we don't court cathartic experiences. We don't say, right, we're going to dig down deeply into our past history, and we don't even talk about it to start with, but stuff comes up, and stuff also comes up for the teacher. You know, yoga teachers can be as anxious as they're, sometimes even more so than some of their students. So I talk about that. I talk about stage fright for young yoga teachers or people that have just graduated being presented with a new group, the feelings associated with that, but a lot of it to do with what happens to students and how they respond, and how in terms of I don't know how much time I've got now, but I'm going to go through this. In terms of we don't go back into the past comes into the present. And I find that in the group work, because people are supported by the group field, people somehow feel able to look at, through the lens of yoga, things that have happened to them in the past that were not good experiences. And they tend to look at them non-emotionally, which I find extraordinary. How that happens, I don't know either. I don't know what the mechanism is, but I know that it works. So that's that chapter. Then there's embodiment. Embodiment is about, if we've embodied anything, it's consciousness. Then dividing the indivisible is another chapter. And that looks at the various categories of consciousness and minds and selves, and there are many. And they're indivisible, but I divide those up because I just think they're interesting. And then sensing, there's a chapter on sensing. About how tissues change by being attentive to them, what people have said about connective tissue and the space within connective tissue. the spatial experience coming from tissue and so on. Then one of my favorite chapters is a chapter called Fields. And we're in a field now. A field is described as a region of influence. And you've got a teacher's field, and you've got each student's field, and you've got a group field. You've got a field in the studio or the teaching space. You've also got a field beyond that. So very interested in radiant fields between individuals and also in groups. And then there's a section called Minds and Hearts, which is Minds and Hearts about love and how the mind can interfere with love or can enhance it. And then there's a chapter called Insight and Wisdom, which is one of my favorite chapters, because what happened to me, that I was doing all this wonderful, I thought, and quite a few of my students seem to enjoy it, wonderful body work and breath work and movement and sailing along. And then suddenly one day I just started talking about, I don't know where it came from, it just came up. I started sharing my insights with students. And I do think that a lot of insights are secondhand, with respect. A lot of people are quoting what other people have said. And my feeling is, if you want to take that additional step, you may be doing it already, as a yoga teacher, when we're in with a group of people, that fertile space where the ego has dissolved, and you're just left with, if you like, the constructive ego, and the obstructive ego has dissolved. That space that we find ourselves in online can be very powerful online. Stuff comes up, I think, that should be shared. And what that does, it's insights come up, and it's always basically various insights revolve around the same theme about our true nature and so on, and our conditioning. And I think they should be shared. I think teachers, if they come up, should have the confidence and to gradually let this stuff out. And people absolutely love it. They love it. So you've got Krishnamurti on one side and his extraordinary mind and consciousness, using him as an example. And then you've got Iyengar on the other side and his scientific precision, or Desi Kachar, or people like that on the other side. Vanda Scaravelli is another one. And if you can somehow bring those two, because the Krishnamurti side of things is flushed out by the physiological side. Spirituality is physiological. So I think yoga teachers can learn how to release their insights. And that's authentic teaching. And the subtitle of this book is called Authentic Embodiment for Yoga Teachers. And so instead of quoting the Buddha, bless him, he was wonderful. Instead of quoting any of these wonderful spiritual teachers, which is fine, but if you have your own insight, and you may think, oh, they're not going to listen to this. Well, they're going to be interested in what I've got to say. Who am I to say such things? Well, say them. You know, if they come up for you, share them and see what happens. And that's truly authentic. And then look at the Buddha, and then look at Krishnamurti, and then look what other people have said. And say, oh, right, they said that, but they said it in their words. So find your own words. And then the next chapter is called Authentic Teaching, which speaks for itself. And the last chapter is called Unification. And unification brings in this whole universal question, what's out there? And I go into that in a bit more depth. So that's it. Thank you.
Wonderful. Really wonderful. So I've put the details of where you can order John's books there, handspringpublishing.com. The direct link to his books is there. And also, if you use the discount code SPRINGBOARD421, that's SPRINGBOARD421, at the checkout, that will give you 10% off and also free shipping in the UK and the USA. So I'm just wondering if we've got any other questions before we stop. There was a question on Facebook, which I can't find now, but it was something along the lines, John, of a very philosophical and deep question about why consciousness, why does consciousness choose to experience itself by coming into form? Something along those lines. And I know many, many, many treatises
I love that. That's lovely. But could you repeat it one more time? What you just
said? I remember it because I can't actually read it now because it's gone. But anyway, it was about why does consciousness choose to come into form in order to experience itself?
Yeah. Do I feel obliged to answer that? Do I feel obliged to come
feel
up
free.
Satisfactory? That how can I move around that? I think I can definitely move, play around with it. Why does consciousness choose
to come into form?
To come into form
in order to experience itself. Yes. I mean, I know this is.
I don't think it chooses.
Okay.
I don't think it chooses. I think it's there. I think that state is already there. And if you like consciousness is a form. If we look at it from the other way around, as we have, if you look at consciousness as a form that's arisen from the body, that's evolved from the body, and many, particularly people like Antonio Damasio, suggest that consciousness, that's it, comes from the body, from sensations, mm-hmm. from deep visceral activity and all the rest of it. So consciousness already has form by emanating from living tissue. It has form. It's coming from structure. The mind, which doesn't have a structure, consciousness, which doesn't have a structure, is coming from the body. But not having a structure in the usual meaning of the word, in the same way that sensation, which doesn't have a structure when you isolate it, consciousness does have a structure. So it does have form. Consciousness is very powerful. It doesn't choose. We choose. And there's a part of the mind, I think. Whether I'm answering this succinctly enough, I don't know. But I think there's a part of the mind between the ego, between the mind and consciousness. It may be in the preconscious, Freud's preconscious, which is just beneath. It may be in subliminal consciousness, which actually says, okay, I'm going to give my friend, my old friend, essential consciousness or pure consciousness or dynamic consciousness or super consciousness, give it a little nudge and say, come on. And then consciousness presents itself, but from everywhere else, as an entity, as a feature, particularly of the Eastern yoga and all the rest of it, it doesn't actually choose itself. It doesn't choose. We are here to make that choice, and that's what the yogis say. That's how it feels to me. So when I'm in my practices and I'm observing something that's way beyond me, it's not a trance. I'm totally aware of what's happening. But my experience is that deeply inside me, that at the same time is way beyond me, is not making a choice and is connected to everything. It connects all individuals. It connects all people. I think a lot of it may have something to do with the gravitational field of the Earth, blanket of intelligence that surrounds us, life-sustaining. But it's a good. If it is a question, it's a good question. But my experience of my personal consciousness is that it doesn't choose, and my acknowledgement that it's not choosing gives it the freedom to expand even more. What makes the decision is my interest and my standing backness and my my personal application and my interest in what's happening here. What is this? And it's always a question: what is this? What is this? Is this consciousness in a certain form? It definitely doesn't feel like it's choosing to me, but if it is choosing, it's not telling me, because perhaps if it is choosing, it might know what I might do with it. Once I know it's choosing, I'll turn it into a structure. So this consciousness that it's, if it's choosing to have a form, is a lot more intelligent in terms of the bigger picture than I am. So that's a rather...
That's a wonderful answer. Thank you.
It's a rather long response. So thank you for the question.
Well, thank you.
All right.
Great. And thank you so much for this evening, John. That was really wonderful.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. Thank you, John.
Yeah. So John Sterk's books are available from handspringpublishing.com. The discount code is springboard 421. And just to say also that tomorrow we have Dr. Kathy Dooley with us again. He's going to be talking about migraines, the anatomy, physiology, and treatment strategies. He's going to be doing a course on that shortly, but that's a free webinar tomorrow at 7 o'clock. And then next week, we have myself and Dr. Carol Davis will be in conversation next Tuesday. And then we have a full program, which you can see at embodiedhealthlearning.com or ehealthlearning.tv. Thank you again, John. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.